I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to episode number 8 of the Create More podcast with me, Ben Stewart. On this fortnight's podcast, I have Sue Butcher, who, if you're in the architecture profession and you use Twitter, I'm sure you'll have seen her name pop up. But I guess the best way to describe her, she's a social media consultant. But I first knew her as someone who live tweeted an event I was at doing a presentation. And she's kind of, yeah, so a social media Twitter expert. And what she goes to companies and she runs her own kind of practice who help develop and teach practices and companies and anyone who wants to know how to develop a social media strategy. And it's not something I was particularly aware of even really a year ago. I mean, you know, who doesn't use Facebook, who doesn't use Instagram, put up images. But the idea of targeting and using Twitter more than just to see stupid photos of food, which, you know, who doesn't want to see that anyway? But I think what's been interesting, especially by doing this podcast, is seeing massively the benefits of using Twitter. I mean, if you remember that the only way that people know this podcast is through Twitter, and the whole podcast is us kind of, think of it half as a seminar about how to use Twitter and half just finding out more about Sue. She's a really interesting background, and she's involved in, you know, so many things now, but she, I guess to a lot of people, I'm sure Twitter is a very obvious thing, but genuinely from a business point of view, from an architectural practice point of view, or any small business or large business, the idea of having a strong theme from the very beginning and kind of following that through and ensuring that you get some sort of tangible output from using Twitter, because, yeah, some people see it as a massive waste of time, and I spend hours playing my phone and not producing or being productive in any way. However, I am massively seeing the benefits of Twitter, and I was really interested to see how she kind of develops this with practices and the kind of attitude she takes and kind of how best to use Twitter. And, you know, we talk about, if you're a small practice, you know, how Twitter can help you. And yeah, it's really, really interesting and something that I'm just becoming more and more aware of. And she's heavily involved now in BIM as well, and the kind of social media integration of BIM. It's a really, really good podcast, and quite informative, if I don't say so myself. So if you know nothing about Twitter, I think it's a total waste of time. I disagree. And this podcast will at least give you more of an insight on how to use it. And if you use Twitter a lot, then some of this will be obvious to you, but I hope that you get something out of it as well. So I really hope you enjoy this, and listen to the end to see who's on episode 9 of the Create More podcast. Enjoy. I literally don't know why they put that switch on there. There's literally a live and off switch, and I was just wondering, why can't I see my voice coming up? Well, I've got a great half of you.
Have you really?
Half. Anyway, right, I'll start again. I'm very sorry about that.
That's fine.
I'm here with Sue Butcher, and thank you so much for coming in.
No problem.
And I will just let people know, I did just record about 2 minutes and it didn't work, so I didn't flick one simple switch. But yeah, again, just to repeat myself, but going back to the very beginning of how I first came in contact with you was, yes, when we were at the SIG presentation last year, which was at the Building Centre.
Yes.
And I did a presentation about Broadgate's waterproofing, and you live tweeted.
Mm.
And again, sorry, if you could just explain why live tweet? Why not use slides, I guess, or just why not one tweet at the end that just said, here's a link to the slides that you used?
Yes. Well, one way to explain it is that when I first came across the phenomenon of tweeting events, I came across it as an audience member who couldn't attend an event. Mm. I was running a practice in Ipswich at the time. This was about 2008. I joined Twitter and I'd found out about the event about the same time. And it was an event called B2 Camp, which is B2 Camp, which is a sort of conference, which was live streamed on the internet. And there were several people there who were already Twitter users, including the founders. I wasn't able to attend because I couldn't afford to, and it was my job to answer the phone anyway. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get permission to go into London to events. But I was able to plug in some headphones, listen to the live stream, which wasn't brilliant, but also see people tweeting using a hashtag, which is a way of making a curated list of tweets. If you send a tweet, that's a short message with a hashtag in it, which is a word with a hash symbol in front, that symbol becomes clickable for a search for all the tweets that have that particular hashtag in them. So if you're doing an event, you just click on, see a hashtag, someone click on it, and then you can see all the tweets. Yeah. So it draws people in. So that's the first thing.
Was that a good way to get kind of traffic to your own Twitter site, Twitter page? You know, if you're live tweeting, then people are like, oh, she knows quite a lot about this.
Absolutely. And I think one of the great things about Twitter is that it's completely opt-in. It's a very open network. Mm. People can find people they're interested in, talking about things they're interested in, people with common purpose or interests, and then they can follow those people. And people do that all the time. They follow and unfollow people at will. So it's a very dynamic network of interconnected people.
So you do find that you're constantly kind of filtering through who's on your follow list, who isn't.
Don't really look at it, but then part of the reason I've been using it for a long time, so I'm no longer obsessed by who's following me. It's more important for me, and it's always really been important for me to use Twitter to have conversations with people. Mm. So I use search a lot because I follow about 14,000 people. I'm never going to see everything that they say. I use search a lot to find people talking about stuff and have conversations and then be useful in those conversations. That's what I really enjoy about using it. And I think the thing that people really value if you're a Twitter user is that you've got experience. You've got, as you said, about interpreting when you're live tweeting or live blogging an event, you're interpreting what's happening. You're giving a fragment, your own perception of what's going on. So quite often when I'm at an event live blogging, and because I've got my own consultancy now, is something I actually get paid to do. The event that you were at, they're the company, clients of mine, I'm a strategic advisor for them on all sorts of digital aspects of their work, and particularly their communications with architects because of my own background. But one of the things that I can do for them is promote their event to a wider audience. Yeah.
And I guess it must be a different way for people to engage with information now. Like, I know death of the PowerPoint, right? But it's obviously a much more enjoyable way to consume information when someone's, instead of 20 slides, they've got one slide and they talk and you're engaging with them. And I guess live tweeting and almost having conversations as the presentation's going in the background, there's kind of like a ripple effect of the person presenting and then everyone kind of discusses it.
Yes, yeah. And it's once you've done it and you've got over the idea that it's somehow disrespectful, because it isn't. And if you go to a blogging conference in Silicon Valley or somewhere...
I see what you mean disrespectful, sorry. Yeah, because you're not...
Some people feel that, you know, you're not giving the speaker your full attention because you're tweeting. And what's really interesting is you have to give them more of your attention. You have to actually concentrate on what they're saying, because you're then trying to translate it into something that you can type quickly, go and find a link to something they've talked about and share that, which I do quite a lot. You know, here's that document online that he's just mentioned in his talk. So you're giving him more of your own attention, but of course you're drawing a lot of attention to the speakers as well, which is something that events organisers really like.
I'd not thought of it as people being slightly offended by you doing it, because I obviously, being a massive Apple nerd, you see the keynote speeches and they're you know, thousands of people.
Everyone's tapping.
Everyone with their screens glowing in front of them, and it's like a super nerd event and everyone's like doing it, and that seems quite normal. But I can totally see why maybe some people be like, Just put your laptop down and listen.
There's a generation thing as well. Yeah, I definitely think there is. I went to, because I work up in East Anglia. I did for the last part of my career, the last 10 years I ran architects practices, and now I still have my consultancy there. So I know a lot of people in the construction industry in that area. I get invited to events there, but I don't actually, if you like, none of my clients are any of those people who are based up there. So they're a completely different audience. They don't really know what I'm doing, but they know me. So I turned up at this event, which was about almshouses. It was really interesting about the almshouse movement. And I sat there, I got out my iPad and I was tweeting. And Architecture for Humanity London started retweeting some of the things that I was saying. And I thought, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, and then afterwards it was Q&A, you know, and I asked a question. I said, there's been a question asked on Twitter, and someone afterwards came up to me and said, I'm really glad you asked a question because I thought you were checking your emails. And of course they had no idea I was doing it because it hadn't been announced, and of course this is only about a year ago, so but they just never seen it.
People who don't use like laptops and iPads just looking at you going, how can she do that?
Rude.
Unbelievable.
Why did she bother coming if she's not going to pay attention?
Because I kind of again, the reason that I was kind of really excited to get you in was because starting the podcast and obviously thinking, well, I've not used Twitter. I set up a make Twitter account, but I was We'll come on to kind of how there's the, I guess, the negative side of Twitter. But what Make have been really good is they say, you know, set up your Make Twitter account and we'll link all the Twitter accounts to one big one on our intranet. So I ignored the email. I was flicking through it. I forgot about it or whatever. But I was away. I went out for drinks and I saw like a celebrity and I got a hug and I tweeted it. And then the next morning I saw on our intranet feed me out drunk the night before, and it was luckily there was nothing bad on that Twitter image. But from that point on, it's been very much a kind of case of, okay, there's my Make Twitter account.
Well, you have official persona, like the Queen.
Yeah,
as an official birthday.
I'm very conscious of that's one parallel. Mm. And then the other one is for the podcast and create more and stuff, because I guess I went from being at uni, I'm going full back to why I kind of wanted the Twitter thing. Being at uni, and you use Facebook, right? Everyone uses Facebook, and you put stupid stuff on Facebook. And then it seemed like more of an adult thing to move on to Twitter. So I didn't really get it. You know, I was like, well, Facebook's enough. And then coming to Make, I suddenly went from having never used Twitter to having a professional Twitter account, which anyone who searched Make could see my name and our internet would pop up.
Associate you with the company, and
And I was like, I was very conscious of, because I remember
what responsibility.
Yeah, one of your slides was kind of there was lots of things, and it was kind of people are almost not scared to put themselves out there, but there's kind of an apprehension that you'll say something stupid. And so I wanted to use the Create More Twitter handle as my own like side personality where I can kind of experiment and do what we're doing now, which is the kind of so I understand the power of Twitter, but I really want to know, I feel like I'm literally just scratching the surface of it. And to get you to come in and kind of, just from researching about you as well, it's been kind of an interesting process, but your live tweeting, if we were well done live tweeting, my first example of Twitter and this idea of live tweeting was not in the construction industry, but in a television industry. If you're watching telly, I was watching The X Factor. On this thing, you can see tweets pop up of what people are saying. And it was my first example of being involved in live
tweet. The media have taken to it, of course, because they realise there's something going on there that they can capitalise on.
Yeah, and obviously X Factor is such like a divisive programme. People either love it or hate it. The tweets were hilarious. It was more entertaining reading the tweets.
Yes.
But that was like my first introduction.
Stop watching the programme.
So this idea of like live tweeting, I'm just getting my head around it. So it was interesting hearing and looking back at your, we'll come onto your website, which is Just Practicing. So I've got most of our info, which is justpracticing.com, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, yes.
And I told people you were coming today and we're talking about Twitter, and all of my questions and information have basically come from your website.
Oh, right.
And so I've gone from not very known very much to, so you should go on it if you're listening, go on justpracticing.com, because if you've not used Twitter, I thought it was, I thought it was really helpful. But it started as a blog, right?
Yes, it began. It began as a blog, as a place for me to put a list of architects on Twitter, because I joined Twitter in 2008, 11th of September 2008, because it's an auspicious date, so that's why I remember it. And Twitter didn't really take off as a mainstream platform until May of 2009, which is that point when Stephen Fry joined, and all of a sudden the users, you know, beat the million. And part of the reason I've got a big audience there is because I was there before and I was doing useful stuff. But and the blog came about because I was looking for architects on Twitter. I think at the time, because it was 2008, recession, I was thinking, I'm going to lose my job. I need to find some other places to work. How do I find architects? Oh, I'll go and see if there are any architects on Twitter, because a friend of mine who's an events organiser had invited me to Twitter. And so I found lots of people in construction industry, the B2 camp people. And I got this list of people who were architects, and I was particularly interested in them. It was about the size of an A4 sheet of paper, and I went on Twitter and I said, well, who shall I give this list to? Because at the time, people were setting up directories, you know, if you want to find architects, look under architects, and they were doing this, and which I thought was, at the time, it was really novel. Now it just seems like, you know, stupid. You just search, you know, but search, at the time, search wasn't even owned by Twitter. It didn't have a search engine. It was, you know, there was one, but it was owned by somebody else. People were just inventing things as they were going along.
It's like the Wild West at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, Twitter, yeah. And you think it is now, well, then, because nobody cared so much then. A chap called Luke, actually his Twitter handle is Luke, who was a civil engineering student at the time, now is a civil engineer. He said, well, haven't you got a blog? And I thought, well, I don't know what a blog is. One of the other people, Mel Starrs, the late Mel Starrs, who used to have a blog about buildings, what's it called? Science of buildings, so building services and BREEAM and all the standards and Code for Sustainable Homes. She helped me understand what a blog was, and Paul Wilkinson, who was another of the founders of the B2 Camp events, he suggested a name for it, because I thought I'd write a blog about why architects are so useless at running their businesses.
Controversial topic.
Yeah. Because I thought, I've got to write about something, and I'm not going to be one of these people who just writes about architecture. Everyone writes about, oh, isn't this a nice building? And this is how we did it. Well, so what? The thing I've got expertise in is managing businesses that are owned by architects. That's what I did. And that's why it's called Just Practicing. The play on the words practice, to practice, we're all just practicing. And the funny thing is, as I ended up being asked to do speaking about social media and then to become a consultant to advise people on using social media, that the name Just Practicing sort of kept being relevant, and then it sort of, and in April it became a limited company. It's now a real proper job.
After four years of
being profitable, it's now a really proper job.
And when you say blog, how would you describe to someone, because
what a blog is?
I genuinely think if you say blog, everyone goes, of course I know what a blog was. And if you explain it, I bet people go, that wasn't exactly how I saw a blog. How would you describe a blog?
Okay, well, a blog is an online journal that's consists of a number of regularly produced pieces of text, usually text, that are published online in chronological order. When it was originally set up, it was the coding for it, and a really good example is WordPress, which is still one of the blogging platforms, which you can now build websites in. But it was originally just a blogging platform, open source, free to use, was just designed so that you could write something and publish it really easily. And the latest things you published were at the top of a page, which was the blog page, which was the home page of your blog. And that was the idea. And this means that if we think back to that time, there are technical things that are really interesting, and then there are the how the idea of blog has sort of been misunderstood and things that it isn't. If we think about the technical thing, the code was all set up as open source code, and it's been around for a very long time, and because it's an important part of the internet, blogging is, that it's connected up to the internet in lots of ways. There are scrapers which go and search for information on your blog. There is RSS.
A scraper is a
bot that goes and finds text and steals text off your website and puts it somewhere else. There are RSS feeds, which is RSS stands for really simple syndication, which is essentially it's a web page which is in a format that can be read by a reader. So you can take, even Outlook, for example, has an RSS feed reader. So you can take the feed, which is a URL, and you can stick it in a reader. Like Flipbook is a reader, and that works on RSS feeds. And then what that does is that you get, the reader gets notified if you make new content, so you don't have to go and get it. It gets pushed to you. And that's what a great thing about a blog, because people often write what's essentially a news feed, call it a blog, and it isn't a blog because people cannot subscribe to it. They cannot say, I want to get the next one and the next one and the next one until I say no. And the real power of the blog is that list building quality of it. I mean, it's a commercial benefit, obviously, but it's also a community benefit because you're developing a community of interested people.
So on a blog, you can subscribe to it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
That's right. And some people make blogs and don't realise they've got to make that possible. And the other thing you can do with blogs is that they're really shareable, and they're also interactive. So unlike a news feed, so a company, for example, calls it a blog, it's actually a series of news releases. They're not inviting comment. They're not asking for people to have conversations with them. They may not have a commenting system, probably not. If they do, it's turned off. A blog has to be interactive, and then it's social media. That is, social media is publishing, that's the media bit, and people having conversations online, which is the social bit. So you need those two things. And so another real powerful thing about a blog is that every time somebody sees your blog post and puts a comment, they're putting new, fresh content onto that page, which Google really loves, of course. So one of the things I do is I help people now. I help companies write real blogs that really drive traffic to their websites.
What do you mean real blogs then?
Blogs in the sense that they write content that encourages interaction, that's useful, that is searchable and shareable and human rather than just articles.
That's probably one of the things that most architecture websites suffer from the most. They are gorgeous with the most fantastic images, but they're very static, aren't they?
Yes.
They don't. And you're saying if you want to drive traffic up to your site, then you have to get people to engage.
Interact with it, yeah.
So that's where the benefit of different ways taking these seriously kind of comes in, is that I was talking today with Kylie, who does our Twittering here, and she was echoing exactly what you said, which was, since she's come on board, we do a blog, and when I hear blog, again, this is going back to not fully understanding these things, and just my experience is that just people write almost, diary entries. It's kind of like
quite a personal thing.
Yeah, very personal, very unique to that one person. Mm. But changes from day to day. Happy, sad, sports, about holiday, it's about this, it's about that. There's no running central theme to it.
Right, yes.
And I think that's the hard thing about, because I feel like that with my Twitter account, with Create More. I want it to be just about the podcasts, but between the podcasts, I felt it was an extension of my personality. That's genuinely how I wanted it to be. So it's got holiday pictures, it's things I saw on holiday at light that I thought were nice photos, but there's no theme running through it. Whereas the Just Practicing one has a very, very, very clear direction of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And what Kylie does with our blog is, when she said, can you write us a blog? I was like, yeah, sure. I just wrote something, and she was like, no, it needs to have... This is the theme that we're going for. It's about, I don't know, exactly what you said, encouraging people to engage with these topics and things.
Yes.
And is that something that, is that your role, that you're saying Just Practicing is now your company? Is that what you help practices with, to try and understand how to engage people?
Yes, and one of the, you've described in a way, there are two types of blogging. There's personal blogging, and where your personality naturally comes into it, and it's the same with Twitter. One of the things I love about Twitter is that people do reveal themselves, and it means that if you follow someone, an individual on Twitter, and you talk to them, or maybe just stalk them like lots of people do. You get a really good idea about what they're like, what their interests are, what they care about and what they don't care about. And that can really help break the ice, you know. And I've met people that I've talked to on Twitter for a year and I'd never met them. And then you meet them and they're like, oh, friends, they really are. And that's because you've got so much to talk about, because, of course, you already have been talking. And that's why it's a great networking tool. So and blogs are great like that. And I know some really good personal blogs. But on the other hand, what's happened with social, a bit like when the internet suddenly got commercial in the 90s and it went from being grey academic text-only content to being colourful, full of really high-res pictures that no one could download, and lots of you know, companies, the dot-com boom and so on. The same thing has happened with social media now in the last few years, that companies have got involved in it and seen that there's something commercial that they can do with it. But what they tend to do is say, well, all we need to do is take the stuff we stick on our website and publish it on Twitter, and it will drive loads of people to our website. But it doesn't work like that, because there's more and more content people are making. There's plenty of noise, and we as individuals don't have very much time. Mm-hmm. So we can choose entirely who we talk to, who we subscribe to. And if we go to a company blog and they're not writing lots of really useful posts about how to design flat roofing, for example, you're not going to click the thing and say, I'll get the emails in my inbox every week, because I don't want them, because they're not consistent, because I'm interested in it for this reason. So when you're blogging for a commercial purpose, particularly, or if you want to keep the same audience who are interested in the same topic, you need to think about focusing, you know, on what you do. But I think on the other hand, the personality bit of it is really important, because that human aspect makes people feel, you know, like they know you, and that's really how people buy things. Even
as your is, I literally typed architecture Twitter, and all that came up was the Architects Journal Twitter account, the Make Architects Twitter account. Maybe that's just in my search engine, and then you, and then pretty much it was just really? Practicing stuff. Because you're, this is going to like not how to get in trouble, but it's because your whole online personality is basically your business. Are you very kind of careful how you tweet, or have you you've ever tweeted and something hasn't gone quite as reacted quite as well as you had, and you've realized actually, yeah, it's not great at the time, but people understand if you keep the conversation going, it's fine. I just, because me personally, when doing the podcast, the thing I liked about it was that I could put my personality out there, but it wasn't like a live interaction.
You could edit it.
Yeah, well, I know I don't edit it, but I could send it out there. And I'd be fine with that. But then the Twitter thing, like, it's such a kind of immediate thing.
Yes.
That I've only ever tweeted like one mildly negative thing, and straight away someone responded. And I kind of was like, almost like throwing it out there, like, stupid, whatever. I didn't really want to get into a conversation about it. And it was a very opening experience to how quick positive stuff, people just maybe retweet it. But negative stuff, or an opinionated, stance.
People respond,
And I think it just, I'm still trying to like learn myself why I like going on Twitter and why I like doing the podcast. I love doing them, but I haven't fully worked out. I like meeting new people and finding out new stuff, but I haven't, my theme is things that I'm really, really interested in, but that's not really a theme to anyone else to engage with. But everyone that listened to it said they just really enjoyed kind of me chatting from, you know, like we are about Twitter, the very basics, and kind of asking you questions. But did you, when you joined in 2008, do you feel like you've kind of changed massively how you use Twitter, or you just kept consistent and actually just the traffic you've just built with kind of slow consistency every year? Or was there a point where you're like, I get it now, okay, I can do this, this and this, and it builds better? Or
that's an interesting question. I think I've learned from my mistakes. Certainly. One of the things you realise, like you say, you know, if you don't say anything, nobody, you're not there, basically. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, don't use a platform like that for a weekend. And as far as everyone's concerned, you're gone, because you're not there, because they don't see you unless you say something. So when you do say something, then there's an opportunity for them to respond. So there's that interesting dynamic. And I've learned lots of things about what works and what doesn't. As far as mistakes is concerned, and you know, saying things you regret, it's quite a hot topic.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a recent example I blogged about on LinkedIn about this barrister who had a private conversation with somebody on LinkedIn, and then she took a screenshot of it and posted it on Twitter. And he sort of seems to have made a bungling attempt to chat her up, actually. And she's not the sort of person who should have that done to them. But of course, she then made it public, which I think is really a bad thing to do, because it was a private conversation. And there's this whole business about public and private going on. And it's something that concerns a lot of companies about how their staff use Twitter.
Yeah.
I've done quite a lot, both with architects and product companies, doing a sort of CPD seminar about how not to screw up online because of that, because there's this
need. No, I think it's fascinating.
Need.
I really do.
Yeah. And so people will make mistakes, but there is a certain element of you need to think twice before you poke out to 10. Don't ever tweet when you're drunk. It is a bad idea. And also, of course, it is possible to delete things, although people can take screenshots of them. Anyway, and if you look in the press, you only need to see that somebody's taken a screenshot, the person's deleted the tweet, because that sort of reduces the amount of backlash they get, because it's not, can't be seen as a retweet anymore. And then maybe they apologise. And I know, you know, from people who've done quite high profile things, that, you know, it can be a dramatic thing. But most people it doesn't happen to at all, because most people never get into the limelight like that. So there's a tendency to be a bit over nervous about
it. My mum's an MP, and she was a...
Wow.
She does quite a lot of tweeting herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she's... This is, again, another thing that scares me about Twitter. So you can get bots that do those auto searches, and I can't remember the name of them, whatever, that sit, and we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah.
And but she said that there's an actual automated thing that if you tweet and delete it, it will... on its own channel, it'll hoover up your tweet and retweet your handle and the deleted tweet automatically. And it's like a feed that loads of people subscribe to, because who doesn't want to see what MPs have deleted when they've been drunk and tweeted something?
Wow. I didn't even know about that.
Well, I don't actually know what it is, but now I'm thinking about it, that would be a really great channel to follow. But again, my mum is in that kind of sphere where they're just looking for sound bites, right? You have to be so careful.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so you do CPDs for companies that...
Usually they're people I'm doing some sort of strategic advice for, because they, you know, quite often it happens that I get the marketing department ask me to come and help them use social media.
Mm.
Then we do a bit of an audit. Then we put together a strategy for how they could use it. And then I have to go and talk to the board. And then the board is really nervous about their staff screwing up. And then we end up doing a CPD session. Or I did an example. I did this for an architect who, we were training some of their staff in Twitter. And one of the things I would naturally do is go and have a look for all the people I can find who in some way appear to be working for the company, and just see what I can find. Because I can then use that as examples and say, this is a really good example, and this probably backfired, and don't do that. And I found somebody who was who'd connected their Twitter account up to their Gaydar account and their Swarm or their check-in account, and then they checked in at work, and it was posting on Twitter, and they didn't mention anywhere. They did mention they worked for an architect, but they didn't mention anywhere who they worked for. But it was possible just by looking intelligently, you know. And as a result of that, we then did a CPD session for the whole staff, and rather than talk to that person. People, you know, quite often don't think. And actually, Facebook is more of an issue for people with that, because people aren't aware that their settings on Facebook can be set up to public. And if they ever post anything public, Facebook by default will automatically post the next thing as public unless you change the setting. And they just don't go and look and see that it says, it's got the little world symbol on where you're posting your status update, and it says public.
Yeah.
Turn it to friends and make sure you're only friends with people that you really trust.
It just terrifies me. I think, like, especially being of the generation that literally didn't have the internet when I was younger and have grown up with the internet. And Thank God Facebook only came in when I was really in my second year of uni. Do you remember it was only open to university accounts?
That's
ages,
right, yes, yes.
And then now, but even now I have some terrible things on Facebook, but they're in a world that I feel is completely closed off, right? It's just a little barricaded thing for my friends.
But it's not.
It's not, I know. And, you know, I'm not a CEO or anything, but I just think, like, kids, when they grow up, they're just going to have all their history, all their mistakes, everything. I just kind of hope that it's seen as less. This kind of shaming thing will be like a fad that is now.
Yes.
This idea that the people doing the, you know, you've been terrible, have nothing to hide, you know, they're so good. But actually, people just realise that a stupid photo of you doing drinking or saying something silly just doesn't hold as much weight as it does right now.
And I think it's very likely that it'll be like that, that there'll be a point at which these things will just be unimportant, and we'll see, because it's about so-called public opinion in the media, and the media talks about it because we like it at the moment. And as soon as it becomes apparent that the people who are doing it are complete hypocrites because they also have the same background, everyone will just hush down, you know, and it will be like, you know, when you were a teenager in the 70s, you know, you just got drunk and someone took a picture of you that was drunk and they stuck it on the wall. And it will be that sort of thing. And, you know, it's just what young people do. So I don't think it will be as important later as it is now. Well, I certainly hope not, because otherwise, you know, get really boring.
Well, enough embarrassing stories that I'm sure I could go on about. But one of the, this is again, I've learned so much just from talking to other people about having you on today.
Oh, brilliant. Well, that's a really good sign, isn't it?
A keyword today, Hootsuite. Never even heard of it. It wasn't until last night that I was looking through, because you've got presentations on Just Practicing. Honestly, if you don't know anything about Twitter, I would definitely go to justpracticing.com.
If you go to justpracticing.com/Twitter, I did an article in the Architects Journal years ago, and I curated together a lot of stuff about Twitter, including a slide deck called To Tweet or Not to Tweet, which isn't, you know, completely up to date anymore, because it's, you know, it's probably about 6 years old. But it's useful stuff there. Anyway,
but I do think that there'll be people listening to this going, oh, it's so obvious, because you don't need to listen to this part. It's the people who, it's just been eye-opening to me how to use Twitter to genuinely benefit a practice. And I was talking to one of my colleagues called Justin, and they were saying that they're doing a project in Oxford, and it's been really beneficial using Hootsuite to just find out what the kind of general, what the council and what the, I'm terrible with names as well now, what the Heritage Council or whatever.
Yeah,
what
local organisations.
What they're all tweeting, what's kind of current at any
what's
given
in the
time.
Papers, yeah.
And he's obviously very passionate about Oxford. He's done projects there and he loves the city. So it's interesting, I only saw it today. Hootsuite's kind of... Well, why don't you describe what Hootsuite is?
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, Hootsuite is a piece of software. It's in the cloud that you use in a browser, which allows you to use not just Twitter, but also other platforms. I really use it for a listening platform. And essentially what it does is that Twitter's made up of lots of streams. There's your home stream, which is all the people you follow and everything they say. And then there's your mentions, which is people replying to you and doing things to your tweets. And there's a private back channel called direct messages or DMs. And there's your favourites. That's another stream. You know, you can click on a tweet and on the star or the heart, depending on which app you're using, and favourite it, and puts it in another list. And of course, you can search. And every time you search, you make a list of tweets. So there are all these streams. And what Hootsuite does is it allows you to put a whole load of streams in a row across your screen. And then it's useful in that sense. You can post through it. It has its own shortener for the URL, which means that it tracks analytics about your tweets. You can now get that through Twitter as well if you go to analytics.twitter.com when you're logged in. And it'll ask you to buy ads. Don't buy the ads, but the analytics is free. The Hootsuite used to be the only place you could do that before with the listening platform. And what it means is, for example, you can set up a screen of up to 10 streams, which are all searches. Mm. So you can search for, you can have a stream which is all the tweets from the local council. You can have a search for the name of the project. You can have a search for the, you know, part of town that it's in. And if there's a hashtag associated with some issue, you can have a search for that. You can make a list of people on Twitter who tweet about this particular topic, and you can put that list in a stream. So you can make yourself a dashboard to listen in.
Because I think that's what's so great, is that when you first go on Twitter, you're just, there's so much information.
And you think you've got to read it all, you've got to follow loads of people, and then you've got to spend hours just reading all this rubbish that they're saying.
And I started with a rule. Yeah, exactly. I started with a rule that I'd try and tweet something every day. And then eventually I looked at the feed and I just... one of your slides had a picture of someone firing a hosepipe into sand. You know, this idea that you throw information out there and it just disappears. And I got that feeling that I didn't know about hashtags, which sounds really stupid. They just popped up on my Facebook feed as hashtag holiday, hashtag sun, hashtag something. And I couldn't work out, and it was driving me mad. And then I worked out what Instagram was and what hashtags were. But now I've done hashtags as keyword searches, and now I've seen how Hootsuite works. And it will just automatically filter just straight away anything with that hashtag in. And now we've talked about like live blogging. I'm finally starting to understand how all the bits and pieces kind of like interlock. And it must be quite a powerful tool once you've got it all set up. It's a bit of fumbling around at the beginning.
Yes, I think you need to spend a bit of time reading the manual, if you like. And of course, we don't do that these days, which is mad. But we just assume everyone knows how all this technology works. Yeah. But also, I think it's important to have a plan, have a strategy. So, you know, I usually say, well, okay, who do you want to talk to? Who's your audience? Go and listen to them. So go and find them on Twitter and use other platforms, other ways that you can search for people. Find them on Twitter. Follow them or put them in a list so that they don't know you're following them. You can do that too. And just listen to what they're saying and what they're interested in. And then ask yourself, right, okay, what do you want those people to do? Do you want to talk to them about something in particular? Well, you can just pile in and do that. And then if you want to be a bit more mature about it, you can think, well, okay, what's my opinion? I can't fit that in 140 characters, so I need to write it down somewhere. Or I've got something I've written. Is it on the internet? No, all right, I need a blog. That's where you get a blog from. Blog is like sort of Twitter long form style. And they go together really well. So you can say, well, I wrote last night, I was so angry about this topic we were talking about. I wrote this thing about it on my blog, and here it is. And you can post the link back to the people you had the conversation with, and then the two things work together. But you need to have a plan to say, well, what do I want to happen? Yeah. What do I want people to do? You know, what's my objective? Even if it's, you know, just an altruistic objective or it's a commercial objective, you need to work out what that is, because then apart from anything else, you can measure whether what you're doing is doing that or not. And then if it isn't, then you need to do something else.
One of the things I wanted to talk about was while we're talking, I'm thinking like, oh yeah, I wonder if I could do this or do that with the Twitter account, and this is how Make do it, and this is how you do it, this is how you've set up your own business all off the back of working out how to use Twitter. And one of my friends from home, she makes these like incredible, I guess, like material flowers, and they're stunning, but because she's in, you know, at home in a small town or city, her like market's very small, like friends and family. But I'm just thinking, you know, it works for architects, it can work for, you know, just using these tools to kind of self-promotion, I guess, is the big thing. And I don't know how you first started, but does self-promotion come easily to you? Because I hate tooting my own trumpet.
Yes.
But you know, like on Twitter, I guess the people who you unfollow the quickest are the people who they're self-promoting.
They're just going on about themselves all the time.
It's kind of like, but there's neutral self-promotion, which I guess is just pushing information backwards and forwards. And then there's kind of the more annoying self-promotion, which is just... every day, if that pops up on your feed, it's kind of, how have you found self-promoting? There's kind of a fine balance, right?
I think it's a really interesting topic, and it's something that I've written another post about recently. I'm at an advantage because I trained to be an architect, but I ended up managing architects' practices. And as you probably know, most architects like to think they can do everything, but there are some things they don't like doing, and credit control, that's one of them. And saying no, that's another. And answering the phone, just in case it's a rep, and who you've got to say no to. And another one is marketing. They're all things that get put off. And when I became practice manager, originally in 97, I just started to be given all these jobs to do. I got trained up to do the financial, and I got asked to look at the website. And so I learned about marketing quite a long time ago and did some training and so on, and developed an interest in it. Mm. And I've always felt that there's a difference between the sort of old-fashioned forms of marketing, which are also known as interruption marketing, which is pushing your stuff on people. Yeah. You know, door-to-door salesman, very good example. Advertising on telly that you have to sort of pause, or we always switch over when the ads come on these days. And print, and even in website advertising. All those things, they all get in your way from what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And then there's something, and there it's also known as push marketing. But the thing about social media is, of course, we can just decide not to have anything to do with that. You know, we get our news through feeds where we don't have to look at the adverts. We choose who we follow and unfollow. We have caller line identification on the phone, so we never have to pick up the phone to someone whose number we don't know. And so all those forms of marketing are not working so well as they used to do. And the type of marketing that I advocate is called pull marketing. Which is about people opting in. So, and what happens is, instead of everyone you push your stuff at doesn't want it, apart from maybe 1%, everybody who sees your stuff wants it because they come looking for it. Mm. And of course, we've got the internet, we've got Google. People can come looking for stuff all the time, and they are looking for stuff all the time. So, and that means that we have to have a completely different attitude to marketing on the internet. So, for example, think about the example of your friend with the flowers. Mm. There's a whole community of people who love beautiful things online, all sorts of different types of beautiful things as well. You know, there's steampunk and, you know, and retro and the sort of 50s feel. And the whole communities of people making and selling things on a very small scale, like Etsy is a good example of that, a website where you can do that. And it's all about beautiful things. I bought the first Christmas cards I ever sent out to my clients when I'd set up the business were all letterpress printed in the States. And I just went looking online for stuff I was interested in, you know, something not religious, something sort of a bit natural and not too sort of flouncy, because I'm not a flouncy person. And of course, it's really easy with the image search and stuff. And I found these beautiful cards and I got in touch with this woman in America and I bought them. And it took a long time to come and I had to pay extra VAT, but never mind. There are whole ways in which you can do that. And of course, people can opt in to finding your stuff. So you set out your stall, and I listened to Alistair Parvin's podcast on the way in, because I think he's great. So I agree with so many of the things he said. And, you know, he said one of the first things that inspired him was The Long Tail by Chris Anderson.
Yeah.
That TED talk. And that's, The Long Tail is about that. It's about how the mass market cannot lord it over the small scale providers, and the, you know, the coffee shop round the corner can do as much business as Starbucks because it can have reviews and advocates online and people sharing their stuff, and you can trust it just as much as you can trust Starbucks. And that's completely changed how people do business. And it also means, of course, if people can do that with beautiful flowers and knitting and letterpress cards, they can do it with construction products and you know, and they can do it with all sorts of other products and services.
I like the fact that one of the things I like about Twitter is that it's, one, scary, but two, it's amazing that you can kind of see worldwide opinions in real time around the world. It's mental how that happens, but it kind of means that people self-police, self-promote at a much faster rate. You know, if people, instead of just being better than the person in the next town or city, it's like anyone who puts up an image of, I don't know, if on Instagram a photo of something they've made, the next person, that's kind of the bar set. And people, that's why I like businesses now. The best businesses, they're focusing so much on how good their customer care is. That seems to be the new forefront, right? Personality and customer care right at the front. I mean, even Argos now is like an Apple store when you go in. They're super helpful and super nice because they have to put personality. People don't trust something if they can't find out loads about it. And
although I think Apple stores have lost that at the moment. And it's quite interesting because if you say something about Apple, apart from the non-Apple people, you'll often get people coming back and saying, God, their customer service was terrible. And I went to buy my phone and several people walked in and walked out again. It was just before Christmas and they didn't have enough staff. But exactly, people know because people are aware of those things. And reputations are quite easily and revealed, and changed by people's actual experiences. Mm. It's a funny example, actually, today. I use LinkedIn a lot because it's a platform that everyone in the construction industry is on. Well, not everyone, but, 750,000 people out of, 1.5 to 2 million people, at least half. And are having some trouble using their help ticket system. And so I went on Twitter and I tweeted LinkedIn help and said, I'm having real trouble with my ticket because they've just copied out the help article that I told them that didn't answer my question and posted it back to me. And within half an hour, and of course this was this morning, so they were all in bed because they're all in the States. Mm-hmm. I got an apology and I'd already got the answer that I wanted to come back, and I thought, so well, it came back really quickly, that's odd. And then I had an apology on Twitter saying, we're sorry, and it's just amazing that.
Yeah, I had a similar experience with the council. I was trying to get a planning document through, and they just weren't responding to any of my calls. 3 weeks went past, nothing. Tweeted them, really disappointed. Within 12 hours, they'd sorted it. I was like, it is good.
Yes, and that's really good because they're probably worrying about local residents.
Yeah.
And you fell into their lap then, and they helped you too, which is excellent.
This is why I guess from an architectural point of view, it's trying to, you said you worked at a practice and you were helping them do all their marketing stuff. My wife's sister, she also works at small practice, and they're between 55 and 65. They know exactly how they do their stuff,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to engage in Twitter, and they don't want to do this. They have their own clients, and it's kind of that's that kind of mentality where I can see, mm-hmm. Well, why would I use Twitter? But why? And she is really she's a business manager at a bigger company has moved this place, and she just.
It's frustrating.
That's that mentality. Because if you, this is the bit I struggle with Twitter. When you explain it to someone who doesn't want to engage, it's very difficult to, you're like, no, it's brilliant. Why? Well, because it attracts more business. How? Okay, can I get a business? I can get new business through it. Well, not exactly, but.
But you can.
You can, but we need to do a strategy. And they're like, mm-hmm.
So give me something for free.
Exactly. So how often, do you find that a lot of companies now, more and more, are understanding that Twitter's a fantastic tool, but it, like anything, it needs direction and guidance, and that's when, is that when you come in? Is that how just practicing works, that they...
Yes, it is. Although what's quite interesting is most of the people I work for are product companies now. And part of the reason for that is that we, because of my experience managing architects' practices, having been trained to be an architect, so knowing how architects think and how they do their work is actually the best asset. That's the bit that they have outsourced marketing people. They might even have social media, but not often.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily have the understanding of how architects work, even if they have sales teams who spend their entire careers getting in or trying to get into architects' offices. Quite often the sales team don't talk to marketing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Sales don't talk to marketing. Marketing and sales don't talk to technical. You want to talk to technical and you're not allowed to. You've got to you listen to marketing and have sales come around and talk to you, but you can't talk to technical. It's just completely mad. So that's the environment in which I do most of my work now. But I do know... little practices. I've got a friend who set up in practice in Suffolk, who used Twitter and a little website that was built for him with a project diary. Mm. And he, because he quite often, as is the case with a lot of small architects, He left the practice he was working at because he couldn't get a foothold into succession. Mm. And a lot of practices in that situation die. And yeah. I've known people who've reached their 70s and 80s, and they've had to close the practice down because they couldn't find someone to take over because actually they weren't they're allowing themselves to let go. Yeah. It's really tragic. But because he left the firm, he sat up on his own. He wasn't allowed to use any of the clients he already had. So he had to drum up new business. Mm. And in that situation, of course, he's a bit more open-minded. But when he was working in the other practice, he wasn't interested at all. Yeah. Of course, then it was, how do you do this Twitter thing? But he took to it quite easily. You know, the project diary meant he could talk about projects which were undergoing being built rather than just wait until they're finished. And he went onto Twitter. He was in a new town where he hadn't done business before. And he just went and found all the people who were small business people who were on Twitter and started to talk to them. And actually, he was very good at talking to people in real life. So mm. he took to Twitter quite easily. And he got a £500,000 job within 6 weeks. So this is a half million pound job.
Yeah. This is engaging with suppliers and things like local businesses. When you say businesses, you
Yeah, it was people who run restaurants, people had cake companies, you know, small business owners, mm. And also estate agents. Through that, he met an estate agent. He now has an arrangement with where the estate agent passes people on to him who want their houses done, and of course. You know, and of course, all those people who've got small businesses have also got houses. Yeah. And of course, you have to understand the local market and, you know, who you want to work for. But there's no reason why you can't say, well, OK, I want to work for people in the health sector or in housing. Let's go and have a look, mm-hmm. see if those people are on Twitter. Because Twitter is such an open network and people are actually quite open to having conversations with strangers. It's a brilliant way of getting into the under the radar of people that you want to work with without sort of having to push yourself in their face and knock on the door, you know, which is rather disconcerting.
One of the things I like about Twitter is that when someone follows you, instead of like, so you can have very open conversations mm. purposely to engage more and more people.
Yes.
But then also when they're following you, you can like we organise these, you know, kind of you can... It's slowly, because if you look at Create More podcast as like a small practice,
yes.
and I'm trying to win new jobs by trying to get more people to come yes. on the podcast yes. and trying to promote it. I think for me personally, that the whole point of the podcast is like an education thing, right? And it's been really eye-opening to see, well, one, they're all free. All the tools are free. Mm. I mean, I don't have to, like, I haven't spent any money other than the equipment that I'm using. Mm-hmm. But if you think, you know, we've got thousands of downloads now, and that's literally just through people tweeting it. There's
yes.
and word of mouth, but I yes. can't. If I've on Acast, which is the website I use, it gives you a world map of everyone.
Oh, yes.
That's done it. And one of the podcasters was Scroobius Pip, who's like a hip hop artist mm. and a podcaster as well. And I got to know him, and he tweeted it, and he's got 100,000 Twitter followers, mm. and it was amazing watching this kind of spider leap across this map, and like there's people in like Canada, North America,
yes.
Poland,
yes.
Iceland, Australia, and it was
isn't
like
it great.
It's amazing.
And it's free.
Yeah, and it was all free. I didn't pay anything. And yeah, I get the odd Pizza Hut advert at the beginning of my podcast, yeah. which is really annoying. But but again, that's free. And then the way you've just described Twitter is, it's your own personal investment of time. And
yes.
I think I still haven't fully understood how to be most efficient with that, you know, like
yes.
you're very good at the live tweeting, brings more people and you have conversations,
yes.
but it must take, does it, to how much, how many hours a day, or are you quite good at,
well, if I do well, I do if I do live tweeting, live blogging at an event, which might be a half day event mm. or a full day event, it usually takes me about a day's time in advance to prepare, because we set up a page for it. You have to talk to the team who are organising the event and make sure they're, you know, they've decided they were going to use a hashtag and don't use a different one, which has happened. And sort of get all those logistics sorted out at the beginning, set up the page ready in advance. And then there's a sort of bit of a follow-up as well. But it is extremely draining to do, because it's quite labour intensive on the day. So I have to take the next day off because I'm completely useless. I'm a zombie. And I imagine with you, you'll find if you put a lot of effort into something like this, afterwards you need wind down time as well.
Yeah.
But then the important thing about what you've realised with your podcast is that social media is the media as well as the social. Mm. So you can have the conversations, but if you don't make stuff, people can't talk about it. You have to make something for people to talk about. And that's actually where the effort goes in. And it's the thing that people miss. Quite interestingly, there are lots and lots of people who are individuals just chatting to each other on Twitter and going, well, why aren't I getting what I want out of this? And then there are lots and lots of companies who are making stuff and they're not making the right sort of stuff. They're not making useful stuff. It's not designed for their audience. It's not presented in the right way. You know, they're making 5-minute videos when they should be making 30-minute videos or whatever. And they're doing all of that, and they're just broadcasting as if that they were ITN, you know, and they're not having any conversation. So you've got one sort of media obsessed and one social obsessed, and actually you need those two things together, because then you can say, you can go looking for people who are talking about the topic that your podcast is about. You can join the conversation, and you can say, we did a podcast about that last week. And if you want people to talk about something else, you can, you know, write articles and write papers and blog posts and make videos and stuff. And it's actually making the stuff and doing that right and doing it efficiently and then sharing it in the right way that isn't just broadcasting, shouting in a bucket. That's what I got it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're coming up to the hour mark, so I'll slowly wrap this up. But what I wanted to finish on was, I guess, giving out free content. This is one of the things that on the Alistair Parvin one, I quite clearly struggle with the idea of giving something away for free when you don't charge for it. And then I don't know why, but I do that with the podcast. But I've just put in here, I put sharing information for free is kind of one of my notes. And it was... because there is a huge amount of stuff on your website, videos that obviously, and that was it, B1M?
The B1M, yes.
Why don't you quickly explain what that is?
Okay. The B1M is a not-for-profit venture, which is set up by Fred Mills and Tom Payne. I think Fred Mills was on the BIM 2020 first group of young professionals looking at what the construction industry would be like in 2050. Sorry, BIM 2050. And he and Tom set up this not-for-profit. And the idea is the B1M is the BIM 1 million, to have a million people watching videos about BIM. Because BIM is so important to the future of the construction industry, because video is so incredibly powerful. Mm. YouTube being the second largest search engine owned by Google, you know, all those vloggers as they're called, all these young people doing it in their back bedrooms, it's extremely powerful, and it's taking over from a media point perspective, from lots of other forms of media. So they're video and BIM. And then Fred approached me and said, well, would you be interested in making some videos about social media and BIM? And I was very interested, because I'm interested in video as a platform. I hadn't really used it before. I'd done a few screencasts. And so we developed the idea that we'd make some very short videos. They're sort of 3 to 5 minutes, I think. They're about BIM and social media. And we've done sort of two series. We did 4 in May, and they were about what social media is, social media and AEC. So the architecture, engineering, construction, social media and BIM. How can social media help the BIM workflow process? Mm. Sorry, bang the microphone. And how can social media help the process of design? And we did a lot about consultation and different software that you can use. And then the last 4 that we did, which were done in August and September, are all about social media, BIM and collaborative working, and what collaborative working is, genuine collaborative working, why it isn't happening, and how we as individuals can do small things to make it better. That one evolved out of the conversations that happened after the first one. And it's really good. I think the one of the videos had over 700 views so far, which I'm really impressed with. The B1M channel on YouTube, and they also have a website, has loads and loads of videos, and they're all made effectively for free. They're either made for free, everyone does everything for free, or there's some sponsorship, which is very carefully done and it's not intrusive. They're getting support. They've got a bit of investment to help them. And they're also doing things like the BIM University. So they're getting together with universities and people who are specialists in BIM, doing seminars that are available. I think they're attending the seminars free. Then it gets videoed and put on the B1M and you can watch it for free. Yeah. So you can learn about BIM properly for free and go to classes, if you like, and learn about BIM. And that's really important because it's a very different way of thinking about building. It requires us to change the way that we work as professionals, break down silos and be more collaborative generally. There's a lot of misinformation about it. There are a lot of people who know virtually nothing about BIM and a small group of people who know a lot. So video is just perfect for sharing those ideas.
Because one of the interesting things that you said was... this is to kind of big companies who don't have a Twitter account, is that they cannot be on Twitter, that's fine, but people will be having conversations about them irrespective of
even if they're not there,
which kind of means you have to engage. It's better to be able to steer it or at least funnel it somehow than just let it free in the background. It's the same with BIM. I think I was very much in this mindset before coming at Make. I was like, I don't get it, it's not what I want to do, it's too much information. And then now I've been here and I've understood how buildings are built. It's happening all around you, kind of the kind of surface of architecture is moving, and you just, BIM is going to happen, and it's great to finally have a kind of a portal of information. I thought that I didn't feel like I was getting a hard sell from like Revit or Ecosim, where you go on their videos and obviously they do a skyscraper in 5 minutes and they do it, whereas these ones were... This is why I like this podcast and this format of a constant chat without any editing, is I feel you learn more by having... by kind of sounding each other out.
Yes.
And the nice thing about the BIM videos were, they were just questions that I wanted to, why use BIM? How is social media good for BIM and stuff? And I think, you know, we could have a whole nother podcast about it. So it's B1M. And
yes, the B1M, yeah.
The B1M, that's it.
I should get you to have Fred in.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking.
Fred Mills, yes.
Yeah, so I think what I want to do is, I think for my podcast, I was going to keep it to 10, and then that would be a series, and then I could stop... take stock of what I've done,
yes,
and then I could carry on. But we've gone well over the hour mark, so I'm going to answer that now. But one of the nice things I want to ask you is, in my head, I've said, right, 10 podcasts and then a break. How on social media do you ever go, right, for 2 weeks, I'm just, I can't, I've got to go on holiday or I've got to get away. Do you have moments? Because you're always online, right? It's quite, it's always there. And like you're playing with your phone on, you must be a nightmare with just constantly being on, like...
It's an illusion caused by technology.
Oh, is it?
I'm not always there. There are times when I'm not there. So I'm not usually there between the hours of about 6:30 and 8:30 every night. I'm not there, with some exceptions.
But you do limit yourself.
I do.
You do very specifically say work time is Twitter time and then home time is.
No, but I am married to someone who doesn't have any social media at all and doesn't like it. So I have to.
That must be enlightening. Well, I'm obsessed.
Yeah, I don't take my phone to bed. Oh, no. Actually, I think it's extremely healthy to have a break. Mm. There are things that I do which are not work. So, you know, I do a lot of walking these days. I've lost a lot of weight by walking, which is great. And I go out for walks and I see beautiful pictures. You know, I see beautiful scenery. I take pictures of it and I tweet the pictures just because I think they're so beautiful and I want to share them.
Yeah.
But it's not work.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's optional.
Because I am obsessed with my phone. And my wife's like, right, put your phone down. because you've obviously kind of over the last, what, since 2008, kind of grown used to Twitter and stuff. Whereas having followers and people like include you on Twitter and people talk about your podcast, it's really exciting. You know, when people mention,
you want to be there all the time.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah.
Yes.
And then suddenly when no one's talking, you're like, oh no, everyone's forgotten. Oh no, someone's mentioned me again. But it's kind of, I guess it's getting used to that You know, finding a middle ground where you're not obsessed with it.
And realising that you have to, that it is, I wrote a post ages ago about it being stretchy and sticky. It's stretchy because it stretches time and conversations can last over weeks. So if somebody tweets you, unless it's urgent, it'll wait until tomorrow. It's fine.
Yeah.
And that's actually quite a good thing because then you can start up again and other people will be around because it's a different time of the day. And it's also sticky because, you know, people favourite things. I've had people favourite things from years ago. Sometimes they're bots, obviously, and you can tell that they're, you know, they're just trying to get you to follow them back.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're real people. And I've had people retweet things that I said years ago and they've come up and I've thought, oh, God, did I say that all that time ago? So it's both, you know, it's not real time. We might feel the urgency.
Mm.
And there are times when it's urgent, you know, you want to be watching Question Time and shouting at the telly and tweeting about it. But and those things you need to do in real time. But most of it you don't have to do in real time. And unless you're, you know, a company and you need to listen out for people saying things, and then it's your job to do that. So that's fine. So it's a bit of an illusion. And so be kind to yourself and your wife.
Yeah, will do.
And leave the phone downstairs. And if you're watching TV together, don't have your phone on either.
That probably won't ever happen. I will try. So what's next? What can people find you doing in over the next couple of months then?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's conference season. So I'm doing a lot of stuff. I'm going to the FIS, which is the Federation of Interior Specialists. They're the sort of fit-out people, although you're not supposed to say fit-out, but they're specialist interior companies and product manufacturers. I'm live-blogging their event. I'm going there as a delegate as well. So I'll also be at UK Construction Week in Birmingham. Doing quite a lot of training, people's sales teams, so I probably won't be tweeting about that. I'm having a break from making social BIM videos with the B1M, so we're trying to start thinking about what we might do next. So I'd be interested to hear if people have ideas, you know, what sort of BIM social media type of thing, collaborative, all that stuff should we be making videos about? And what videos should the B1M be making as well? Because I think they're always keen to hear from other people.
Well, I think that part's really exciting. I'm curious to see what they do because BIM is still so misunderstood. Everyone has their own interpretation and opinion of what it is, and yeah, that's why I like the B1M thing. I think if some more videos would be great.
Yeah, it would.
Right, well, thank you so much. We've gone well over the hour, Mark, and that's been really interesting. Thank you.
No, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much. Well, there you go. That was episode 8 of the Create More podcast with Sue Butcher. I spent a lot of today researching that, and not just today, quite a few weeks actually. I do a bit of in-depth research, but today I did a lot of chatting around when people heard I was interviewing Sue, and a lot of people have heard of her, and some people even seen her talk and stuff. It was really interesting to hear everyone has a different kind of take and a view on how to use Twitter, and I don't mean you know, just getting followers or likes or something, but like genuinely engaging with it. I mentioned in the podcast that one of my colleagues had kind of got work off the back of using Twitter by constantly monitoring people's Twitter accounts in Oxford and stuff, as in like councillors and the Heritage and Society and things. And that was really eye-opening. Kind of the first time I'd really seen, you know, direct evidence of Twitter being helpful. But I guess, as we say in the podcast, I mean, there's a genuine fear of saying something really stupid on Twitter and then getting called up on it. I mean, when I interviewed Scroobius Pip, I know that he's got into many, many, many arguments with people on Twitter. But do you know what? Because he fiercely defends his position and believes in what he says, I'm sure he's made the odd drunk one by accident, but his brand is himself. So he's kind of, well, one, in a more unique position that, you know, his personality is his brand and therefore he can't be wrong because it's his opinion. But because he dukes it out on Twitter, it's really entertaining, and Instagram and stuff. And that's why he has so many followers, because he really does engage. I mean, every day he's on it chatting to people and stuff. And, you know, he's built up 100,000 followers. And I think if you get to that level, you really have to kind of, one, be in the public eye, and two, really engage with it. But on the flip side, my God, someone showed me an article today about a woman who, I won't repeat what she said, but she made a slightly racist joke to her friend before she boarded a flight to South Africa. Didn't think anything of it. Had 100 followers or something. And 8 hours later, her tweet had gone viral. Some news reporters had picked it up. It had been retweeted over 1 million times by the time she landed. And by the time she landed, she'd been fired and was front page news and the most trending topic on Twitter in the world. So yeah, you know, there are the occasional horror stories to listen to. But I do think that having done this podcast, you know, I haven't ran a project myself that has a huge amount of kind of public like thought and interest behind it, so why would I be aware of these kind of bigger Twitter things? But that was always the goal of this podcast, was to find out, you know, how these things are done, you know, like how to self-promote yourself without being really bloody annoying and just people unfollowing you. I'm kind of still working that out, you know. I know a lot of people of my friends on Facebook unfollow me because all I ever do is bang on about the podcast and how many listeners I've got and how I've done this. And it's been an interesting kind of tool in that respect. And if you're still listening, it means you quite enjoy these bits at the end. So this is episode number 8, and I've decided to round up this. I'm going to call this series 1. And we're going to round it up with episode 10. So this is episode 8. So we've got episode 9 and episode 10 still to go. And I didn't even mention in episode 7 that I'd be interviewing Sue. And that's because quite a few people got shifted around. So episode 8 is definitely booked. It's definitely happening. It is Chris from Studio Octopi. And we're talking all about Kickstarter campaigns and how architects, or really anyone, can start a Kickstarter campaign. They're doing a Kickstarter campaign to do a floating swimming pool in the Thames, which is the coolest idea, because I wanted to do something not quite as cool as that, but something very similar with the Thames in my sixth year project. So it's really dear to my heart. He's a really interesting guy, and I love the idea of kind of using, as Alistair Parvin said, 1 million people with £1, not one person with £1 million. So that'd be really good. So that's episode 9. And then the last episode, episode 10, I haven't quite booked this yet, so a bit tentative, but Victoria Thornton, who runs Open City, she has agreed in principle to sit down with me. And I really want that to kind of be the end. That'll be episode 10. And I've learned more than I ever possibly could have imagined and kind of experienced more about this podcast. So thank you so much for listening. And I've had way more listeners than I thought I would, and it kind of slightly freaks me out that I know so many people listen to the podcast now. But all of you, apart from a few of my very close friends who would rip me for anything, have been really, really nice about it. So I really hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and tune in for next fortnight's podcast, because I think it'll be a really good one. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.